And there's for those who have experienced domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. However, the past couple of years, we've also added trafficking into that because it's so closely related with those issues of power and control that we already see with those clients that we serve. In addition to providing intervention services for people who have experienced violence in their lives, we also provide help to families and communities. And we do that through our 24-hour crisis line, through our office, and helping not just those victims, but their families and friends learn how to deal with the trauma that has affected their family. We provide our 24-hour crisis line. We have an emergency shelter. We provide counseling at our office. And a lot of what we do is just being there to provide support, information, and options for people, no matter what they are deciding to do with their lives. We're there to support them no matter what. We also do a lot of intervention, prevention, going out and doing just information and presentations to schools, to community groups, to civic groups, to let them learn about how they can become a part of the movement to end violence before it even starts. Sharing with people about how they can stand up in a situation, how they can step up and say something if they see something happening that makes a huge difference in the lives of others. So that's kind of a little bit about what we do and the people that we serve. We are one of 20 organizations across the state of Nebraska that provides these similar services. And so we can always connect people in different areas as well if that's a need.
So, Nikki, I want to follow up just with a couple things. Just in case there's somebody here thinking, wow, is there really that much need for the things that you address? How would you answer that? How would you be able to give us a portrait of that?
Unfortunately, there's a huge need. National statistics show us that 1 in 4 families will experience domestic violence. And so that's a huge indicator right there. In terms of trafficking, we have seen through recent studies that every month there are 900 individuals for sale who are bought and sold for sex just in Nebraska. So, I mean, that need is huge. And many times, whether it's domestic violence, sexual assault, or trafficking, it's not out in the open. We're not all seeing it. But it is out there, and it has probably touched, one of those issues have probably touched each one of us in this room, even though that person in our lives may not be ready to share that yet. It is definitely all around us.
So over 900, you said, in what period of time in Nebraska?
In a month.
In a month. Okay, that's, I was trying to get my head around that.
It's amazing to think about that.
What's one of the biggest factors in why that number is where it's at? What has driven that?
The need, people wanting to buy and sell people. It is a commodity, unfortunately. And so where there is need, that is where traffickers take the people that they are selling. So unfortunately, we have seen that. At our agency here in Kearney, Nebraska, we have seen it with people, you know, they have moved to different areas and they've been trafficked. They have been forced into some situations where they thought maybe it was a good job opportunity, but slowly learned that it was really a trafficking situation where they were being held against their will. They were forced to participate in activities that they were not willing to do. And lots of different situations. So it's affected people in our community, and families in our community, unfortunately. And we continue to see that. And so part of our effort is to spread that education so we can maybe stop the need for that, and try to help people who have lived those experiences deal with that trauma.
Thank you, Nikki. We're going to circle back around to you in a few minutes as far as some other follow-up questions, how we can help and things like that. Dalton, tell us a little bit about Crossroads and what it does and why there's a need there.
Yeah, well, I work at Crossroads Rescue Mission. There's one here in town on 39th Street, and then we're also in Hastings, too, as well. And the one in Hastings has been around for about 30 years. And it started just as a church organization that just kind of figured, you know, they'd lend some handout to some people that, you know, desperately needed it. One of the things that kind of separates us from, you know, other homeless shelters you might have heard about is we have a program. And so the first step of that, when they're checking in, all money is handed over to us. And that, you know, they get it all back when they're ready to check out. But, that's mainly just to, you know, protect them for the most part. A lot of them have, you know, issues with that. But as we go, we start, just, you know, kind of restarting them, building them, you know, mainly with their foundation up on it's Christ-centered. And I think that's the most important part because, you're not going to have Christ at that foundation, no matter what changes you make to the building. I mean, it's still going to get knocked over. Another thing that we try and do is instill, you know, work ethic. So they're required 2 hours of community service, every day on, whether that's at the beginning of the day, the end of the day, they all have, you know, meetings, job hunting and things like that. But they start off with the, devotions and then the community service. And we just provide structure, for their lives. A lot of them don't have that. You know, they've been, some wander, some caught bad breaks. And you know, just that structure alone, it really helps them. So they get up and you have the devotions, you know, first thing in the morning. You know, spending time with God. Probably the most important thing for, you know, any of us to do, not even just people at the shelter. Then the community service, instilling that work ethic, a lot of stuff to do, you know, whether it's maintaining, appliances around the building, cleaning, cooking in the kitchen, they all are required to, you know, cook for each other and everything. Our thrift store is opening up. We're kind of expanding a little bit. We have a brand new building next door. Hopefully, sometime in December, as soon as some stuff goes through, we'll be opening up for business. And that thrift store was going to be, you know, just a huge thing for, you know, both us and Hastings. You know, all the money goes back into the shelter, to provide, you know, things for everybody and resources that we might need. You know, as far, and then, you know, we have lots of volunteer, opportunities too. You know, just, spending time with the guests, helping them out. I mean, they really enjoy it and they really like it. But one of the biggest things, that I've seen since I've started working is, you know, the impact, Crossroads does have on us. There's a lot of, you know, people that come in that for me already, you know, I've just, you know, change my perspective on things and outlook on things. They're not always there, you know, necessarily by choice. I mean, a lot of them do make, you know, pretty poor decisions. But sometimes, you know, you're just dealt certain hands and, just rough to see. But it's important that, you know, that need is there right here in our community here in Kearney, and in Hastings.
So Dalton, some of the things you mentioned as far as, you know, devotions and helping them get a sense of who Christ is, connect to Him, community service, so learning that importance of serving and working. Beyond those things, what are some kind of long-term things that you are trying to do with anyone who comes there as a guest, such as, you know, plans for life, finding a job? What kinds of things do you work with them on in that direction?
Yeah. So we do help them, with, job applications. I think one of the PRP classes that we do, is, just practicing interviews, you know, mock interviews and things like that. A lot of times with our community service, they end up getting job skills to put on those applications as far as, yeah, I worked in this warehouse or, you know, I worked in this kitchen and everything. And then the other thing that, you know, we try and do is just make them, you know, as stable as possible when they get out. Money management, there's a lot of training that we do in that as well. And that's another reason why we do, you know, take all their money, you know, right at the gate, goes in a safe, or, you know, we hold on to certain things. So that way, you know, they can be taught to do these things and taught to manage and, you know, instill work ethic and, those basic things that you need to, you know, be stable on your own. And then mainly just, that focus on Christ, and just knowing that whatever they have to go through, cause they will go through other things, even though they've already been through a lot. And, you know, that focus on him is going to be the only way they're able to get through anything.
So, Stephen Dudley with Nikki and Dalton, you know, we're kind of focusing here on local needs. And I know you've touched on this in your teaching and your stories, from Christ Community. Is there anything that maybe you haven't touched on that you've seen at Christ Community as far as vision that God's given to people, things that God has done as far as getting involved in meeting local needs, that you think would be a great story to share with us now that might inspire somebody here to think in terms of, hey, maybe that something similar would be what God would call me to do? You think of any? I know that's putting you on the spot.
Kids Hope, yeah. I was thinking there's a woman in our church who's the director of Kids Hope in Greeley, and she's gotten into a local elementary school where she matches mentors with at-risk children. And I think that's been a really great success because it takes an hour a week to meet with an at-risk child in an elementary school just to help tutor them with their schoolwork. And it's interesting how the relationships develop, and that goes on for another year or 2 years or 3 years, and just to see how that helps some of these children with their education. I think that's a great, very practical kind of ministry that people can get involved in.
There are a lot of things I think. We think in big pictures that you need a lot of money and a lot of organization. But a lot of it is person-to-person kind of things. I think of that one, which involves 1 hour a week with one child. That's not a lot of time. Just mentoring, helping, working through problems, things that people feel are facing at home. Horrendous stories that sometimes kids go through, which is pretty troubling. But other times you can just... those situations that are so simple, we have a local refugee center that we're able to help get off the ground, and it was people go down and just mentor a refugee. And you say that's scary. Well, it's not really that scary. They're more scared of you than, you know, their way around, and just helping them with the language, helping them with this, that, how life works in this country of ours. Thinking of my daughter who does what you do on a volunteer basis, just as a young lady, and they will visit the clubs and get to know the girls, listen to the stories, pray with them. We have a group of people that will just simply make little love baskets for these women who are really caught in something they don't want to be caught in. And so I think there's just little ways to be a part of that, and sometimes we can think of the how do you eat an elephant so big, one bite at a time, so to speak? I think that's how it works.
Yeah. As you were talking, I thought of Jesus' statement in Matthew 9:13, where he said, "Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous but sinners." And, you know, just that sense of how do we view people in these situations? You know, it's part of the reason we use the word broken in the title of our conference. They're broken people, just like we are. Mm-hmm. And it calls for mercy. And so, along those same lines, Nikki, thinking in terms of what people can do, you know, a step we can take to get involved, what are opportunities that people can get involved at the Safe Center?
Well, I was thinking about a couple of people sitting right in front of me. It doesn't have to be so hard. Zan brings us Bibles that we put at the shelter. Emily, I know, has had youth group participants before help us fold newsletters and different activities. We have a youth group coming in next week to cut ornaments that we'll be putting on trees in the community for the needs of our clients, women, men, and children, during the holiday season. So there are so many just little things like that that make a huge difference. There are so many ways in our community, you know, whether you're in the area of the Safe Center or you live somewhere else, reaching out to that crisis center there and letting them know that you're there to support them, that you can help them, whether it's bringing a speaker into your congregation, to your women's group, to your men's group, to youth group, just helping promote that education, finding ways to give financially, to help, you know, in other ways through providing in-kind donations that go to help our clients, whether they're at shelter or they're still at home, and maybe sometimes even moving forward to live a life free of violence. So there's so many little ways to help, and I think the most important one is probably the education. We know that it takes all of us to step up and to be able to have that awareness and education that there is violence in our world and we all have to do something to stop it, even if it's, you know, just saying, hey, I know there's somewhere that can help. That makes a huge difference to someone who's hurting. So I think that you have to decide what is the best thing for you to do, what you're comfortable with, and start there and find those possibilities where you can help others grow.
And one of the things I told Nikki, I keep Safe Center materials or contact information on my desk just in case the need for that would come up with someone. So she does have a display table out here. There's contact information there. If God's kind of tapping you on the shoulder and you're thinking, you know, I'd like to get involved there. I'd like to be a resource for people that might need help there. And so, Dalton, how about you? You mentioned, you know, the importance of coming and connecting with people there. What would be some specific steps or things that people could do to get involved? Crossroads.
Yeah, well, we at Crossroads rely very, very heavily on volunteers. You know, we had limited faculty because we're completely nonprofit, rely on all donations and private grants. So pretty much everything we have has been given to us and the Lord has blessed us with. And so that's why it's very important that we, you know, we get these volunteers. And a lot of the times, one of the better things that they do is just, even if you're just coming in and spending time, you know, with people, that connection with them, you know, cause I can sit down and, you know, they like me and they like spending time with me, you know, but I'm at least, you know, I have that money factor there as why I'm there partially. But when you have volunteers come in, and you know, you're there cause you want to be, it means a lot to them. And, it's very, it's just very touching, you know, when you see, you know, how the, just, you know, not only their lives are impacted, volunteer lives are impacted. And then some of the other things that we have, you know, just basic maintenance around the shelter, right here in Kearney, we hold, we're at capacity about 61 people. So we have to provide food for all of them, cooking. You know, and a lot of that they do on their own. And, it's just nice sometimes to, you know, come in and kind of, you know, do that for them, to know that people, you know, are out there that, that do care and that know that they're, you know, just like us, you know, they just have had, you know, more difficulties or less difficulties or, you know, whatever it might be. We also have our thrift store. There's a lot of volunteering that's involved in that too. Sorting through donations and everything, we allow the guests to come in and, you know, provide them with what they need, coats, kitchen utensils, anything like that, especially for when they're moving out. We also like to provide them with that type of stuff too. So furniture, pretty much anything that can be used to help them be more substantial when they're moving out. So a lot of that takes a lot of manpower, a lot of stuff to move around. And then, like I said, we do, you know, even if it's, starting a Bible study there, you know, just maybe a group at a certain time at night or, you know, in the morning or during the day, you know, they always need that stuff and we'll always need people to come in and spend that time with them.
Thank you. And, you know, if you're curious, what is it like to volunteer there at Crossroads? Mallory back here, you should talk to her because She does quite a bit of volunteering there and can give you firsthand experience. Do you have a question, Nikki, that I'm going to give to you? And this comes from the crowd here. How can we help reveal to the general public the extent of human trafficking in this area? Do you have some thoughts on that?
I think that's tough. You know, like I said, you know, we believe that that education, awareness of these issues is extremely important. However, we also know that some people aren't ready to hear it. Some people aren't sure what they can do to really make a difference. And I think it's important to start with ourselves. You know, even before I came up here, I was reading some articles because I thought I haven't updated myself recently on what's been happening in this area. Reading some articles, talking with people, starting small, start with your family, start with your congregation and talk about those issues and decide how you might be able to make a bigger impact. Connect with us to see what we have going on and the connections that we have across the state to see if there's a way to come together and collaborate to take that word out to a bigger audience.
There was a documentary that NET, our PBS channel, had done. You may be familiar with it. It's a two-part, 30-minute series each on, it's called Sold for Sex, Trafficking in Nebraska. And it, I'm sure that it'll get outdated very quickly as far as numbers. But that was the first time I'd really heard anything about it. And it was very eye-opening. And it's a good resource just to point people to and say, here's, you know, two parts, go for it, and just you'll learn a lot. So anyway, pass it on.
Thank you, Chad. We actually passed that back and forth, I think, among our leadership team, and that was helpful. But I'd already forgotten about that as a resource, so thank you for remembering that. This one I'm going to throw out to anybody. I kind of want to point it at Dalton, but maybe the rest of you would have some feedback as well. So when we encounter a homeless person, how do you approach him? How do you minister to him? How do you seek to help them? How do you talk to them about what resources are available? Because for some people, it feels like such a big step to take. Any recommendations?
Well, I think for starters, just treating them like you would anybody else. I think that's the biggest thing. Money isn't necessarily always the answer. Sometimes those handouts can be, not as good as they could be. Not saying that they're wrong or anything. But I think one of the biggest things is, it doesn't even necessarily have to be a crossroads. Just casting that net out, connecting with them, engaging with them. So if you're approaching somebody, just ask them how their day is going, ask them, why they're there, what they're up to. I mean, everyone's got a story and a lot of them are, very open and very, willing to talk. I mean, they just want to be treated and, like normal. And, sometimes when they're, on the street like that, they get, they get looks all the time. They get, treated certain ways, and they've been through, a lot of them have been through quite a lot. And so even just that, normal connection with, just a human, talking with them and spending time with them is, I think, it's super important.
I think that's a really great word. If I could just add to that, sometimes we stereotype people in those situations, either with the women or a homeless person, and think, oh, they're just play in the system, they just need to get a job and get their life cleaned up. And what was helpful for me was to get to know some people. There's a bridge north of Greeley. Underneath the bridge is a community of people. They live in appliance boxes. We took a little bit of, it's some years ago, we just took a little bit of a step of faith and wanted to just introduce ourselves. How can we help? What's going on? It was very revealing. These are real people who didn't want to be there, who would like something better, and were a bit trapped in their situations. And it really helped to change my image of these are, and I love the language that you've been using, brokenness. I think is just really helpful language rather than terrible people or lazy people or, you know, whatever, which is not the case in many situations.
Okay, so I'm Mallory, and I volunteer at Crossroads, and I've been volunteering there for about 5 months, and the Lord put it on my heart to just minister to these people, and I'm going to tell you guys that the first thing to do with these people is just to love on them. It's not about preaching to them. At this point in their life, they're probably not going to respond well to you if you just go up to them and try and teach them about God, because the hands that they've been dealt or the problems that they've gone through, they don't really understand what that means. What you can do is love on them and just show them that you care about them and make sure that they know that you genuinely care about who they are. Something that I do is I go there every day, whether, and maybe it's just 10 minutes a day, hours, and sometimes I do end up spending hours there when I have hundreds of other things to do, but I just talk to these people and really try and get to know them and love them, and they open up so much to me because they know I genuinely want to be there and I care about them. And when God puts it in my heart to minister to them or to talk about God, whether that's my relationship with God or just praying with them, whatever it may be, then they're more open to that. Something else also that you guys, I want you to think about is just how much it can impact your life. My days aren't the same if I don't go and see these people. They're just so real with you. And in our world today, there's so many people who are just dishonest, and they just, it's just so hard. And these people will tell you about their lives. They'll tell you their struggles. They will tell you anything that you want to know. And they just want you to care about them because they most of the time don't have any family members. They don't have anyone to love on them, nothing. And that's a basic need. And it talks about that a lot in the Bible. That's the second commandment, is to love others. And so just remembering how important that is. And it's not always words that show them that. It's more actions. And just remember that God talks a lot in the Bible about serving the poor and those people. So remembering that it could happen to any of us. My sister ended up at Crossroads, and she's 18 years old. So we never thought that would happen, but it did. And we raised her very well. So just know that any one of us, and I could be there, anyone here could, and they're just like every one of us.
Thank you, Mallory. Here's a question that any can answer, and I think, you know, we all may struggle with this at times. It says needs are all around us when our eyes are open. So thinking in terms of what was talked about this morning, seeing those needs. And there are so many that it often can feel paralyzing because it's just overwhelming. So how can a person maintain all the relationships and needs of those whom we seek to move toward when our eyes are open? So how do we deal with that paralysis? I'm going to leave this one open and see who wants to bite. Dudley, you look like the wheels are turning,
yes,
so
well,
I'm going to pick on you.
That's fine. That's great. I'm glad to be picked on. So at one level, a need doesn't necessitate a call, because indeed the needs are everywhere. And I think if we can, and if I just jump in to help this need, and it's really not part of my heart and my passion, it's probably not going to last for very long. So I think, why not pursue meeting the needs where God is leading you? And I mean that very seriously. Why not pray and ask God, where do you want me to go? Is there something that you've already prepared in me to help meet this kind of a need? So even, you know, an acronym from Rick Warren, SHAPE, where you take your S-H-A-P-E, your spiritual gifts, your heart, your passion, your abilities, your personality, and your experiences, and you put those together, and maybe that will point you into a direction that will be a passion of your heart, plus you will feel a real sense of call in that direction, and you'll stay there, and you'll help there, and I think the longer we're involved in a ministry, the more significant the impact will become. So that's what I would encourage somebody to consider doing. Really pray about and see where they would fit in a good ministry.
Something similar along those lines, I think, I look at it as finding my niche in the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Where am I specifically called to do? What am I supposed to address? Those things. But I think there's a bigger picture thing here that I like to just throw out there, and all of our churches are different, but I wonder if creating a culture within our churches that empowers people to do that isn't a valuable thing to pursue. In other words, that we want to encourage, a biblical foundation for this is in Ephesians 4, where it talks about leaders, really their goal is not to do all the ministry in a church, but rather to equip the saints to do the work of ministry, as it puts it in verse 12, 16, okay. But it's really important, I think, to think in those terms. What kind of culture are we creating within our churches that we can encourage people to use those gifts, to jump into ministries like you've heard, and other callings that they might have in their lives, to stand with them, and how can we encourage you in that? How can we help resource that? How can we better equip that ministry to be successful, if I can use that language? What to do if that ministry fails or you're struggling in that? Or is there some way that we can be mentoring people in the process to really unleash not only us as people, but unleash churches to have that freedom? What you're doing today, I think, is phenomenal. To have these folks up here and to be aware of some things that maybe we're aware of, maybe we're not. That's important. And as God tugs at your heart, this is where I'm called to do what I'm called to do. Then, hey,
so free to pursue maybe that. If I can just help think through in my own mind, kind of, I'm a learner too. So something that I said was more the individual. How can I, but you're thinking, how can I, as a pastor or leader, help my church discover different kinds of places by really creating an atmosphere or a culture that's blessing this person to do that kind of ministry and blessing this person to do a different kind of ministry. That's how I'm understanding you. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think it doesn't even mean, I think you were mentioning about money is not always the answer. And not that the church has to support and put everything that everybody wants to do in a line budget, but rather it's just that supportive atmosphere where people are serving Jesus and we support people serving Jesus. We want the work of the kingdom to advance and whatever that looks like.
You know, I always think as a leader, there are creativity and gifts that people bring into situations that a leader or leaders will not have. But there's also something that kind of in the context of what has been talked about today, there's an eye for needs that some people are going to have that others won't have. I mean, some of us maybe can come alongside, you know, Nikki in the Safe Center, for example, in a supportive role. She's probably got an eye for certain needs, you know, of domestic abuse, human trafficking, that, you know, maybe some of that we can eventually pick up, but there's an eye there that goes beyond what some leaders have. Same, you know, Dalton and Mallory, when it comes to the homeless person, that doesn't mean the rest of us shouldn't be involved helping in some way. But there's an eye there. There's just that view that I think is sharper in some people than it is in others. So we want to encourage that. I appreciate those words. How do you balance? So when you get involved, you know, missionally with people, helping them, taking the gospel to a broken world, between having a Messiah complex and, you know, getting that idea that, yeah, we're the Savior, we're going to do this, and simply being the hands and feet and heart of Jesus. Any words of wisdom on that?
I think that's part of what we do every day. I have a staff of about 20, part-time and full-time, and many volunteers. And one of the things that we always talk about is you can't do any more work than your client. You're not doing this for them. It has to be their decision. You're there to help them. You're there to provide all the choices and support them no matter what they decide. And it's hard sometimes. It's hard for my staff and volunteers when we see someone going back to an abusive relationship. We see them going back to, situations that we know just aren't healthy for them. They're not ready to make changes. But we know that we've planted seeds, and that's something that we talk about a lot, is just that reminder of, we need to all use our passions. And sometimes just providing a little bit, planting that seed, it will grow when it's ready. When everything is right, it will grow. And so that's something we have to constantly remind ourselves of, that we are a tool. We are not the end game.
We have an expression that we use of doing ministry with people and not to people. For some reason, I'm going through my mind the hilarious line from the Star Wars movie where Luke appears and he says, Princess Leia asks, "Who are you?" I says, "I'm Luke Skywalker. I've come to rescue you." And we sometimes can come in ministry things of riding in on our white horses and thinking that way rather than walking through life with people in need, loving them, caring for them.
And it is, I think too, just helping ourselves remember that we aren't the Messiah. That's another one, and yes, we're depending on Him. And it came up this morning that being unleashed starts with prayer. And in some ways, kind of what we've heard, it starts and it continues with prayer. Any suggestions for mobilizing people to pray? That's an open question, too. Whoever wants to jump in there and take it. I see Will's turning down Steve, so.
Will. I don't want to be talking all the time up here. Because all of our ministries
exactly
are reliant.
Yeah, well, I think at Crossroads, it's that devotional time that we have. We spend time praying, whether it's for them or, it's just one person praying. A lot of them are new to that stuff. And so a lot of times you just hear it over and over again. Eventually, something's going to stick. And so that's why we like to start off our day with that. Because that's, the most important thing. We want them to know that it's the most important thing. And then when we're, just our day-to-day actions, kind of touches back to that last question, but, just being an example, showing them, they're going to start to wonder, why is this person different? And that's sometimes all it takes, because they're watching, they're always watching. And so that praying, if you're taking your time and starting to pray with them, eventually stuff's going to happen and they're going to be like, they're going to start getting connected.
One thing I would add too that goes right along with a heartbeat of the network and many of us and many churches, and that is you have to pray about praying. I mean, this is how absolutely dependent upon Christ that we are. And so, as far as mobilizing people to pray, we need to pray about that. And one of the things that drew me when I got involved with going on ITI trips with Network Beyond is how much prayer is a part of that ministry. I mean, you can tell from Dudley and Steve being here today, they're pretty smart, gifted guys, but they couldn't have organized what's gone on in Network Beyond, even with the amazing gifts they have.
There is really an aspect of that that's so important, Tom. And I don't know if you sense this, but I mean, there have been many, many people praying for you today. And I have a prayer team of a large number of people who are praying. I've heard from people all over the world, in fact, in response to our call to prayer. Let me throw something a little radical. I hope it's not too radical, but I think when it comes to prayer, everybody should be praying. Everyone prays. But I do think there's a giftedness in prayer where some people are, this is their ministry. And I've just noticed this surface. I have a prayer team that's fairly large, many, many people. The great people, they pray for me. I have a more intimate group of people that pray for me, and they pray like a mother whose son is in Afghanistan. You know what I mean? Everybody's praying, but some people are just gifted intercessors. I want them on my side when I go somewhere. And I think it isn't so much just quantity when it comes to prayer. We got to have 4,000 people praying or it doesn't. But it's also there's a, I would, yeah, some of you here are intercessors that you just love to pray and you're devoted to prayer and we all pray, but there are some of us that are just kind of gifted in those areas. I mean, we have had a couple of experiences where people will contact us in the middle of the night saying, something's happening where you are today. I know I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I've been praying for you specifically about some dangerous situation. And are you doing okay? Now, who does that? Most of us don't. We would pray, but we don't think in those kind of terms. So I do think there's intercessors who will really focus in on those girls and the homeless and whoever they might be. All of us can be supportive in prayer. Some of us will be gifted, I think, too, especially. That's our niche. We have a lady who coordinates this, one of our prayer teams in church. She probably would never go on a mission trip if it was across the street. Okay? But she has organized this army of people. I mean, just amazing. She is so faithful. And other folks in our church have asked about her, how does she do this? She's got pictures and she's got stories and they go out 2-3 times a week. And she asked about how the people are doing. I said, oh, goodness, I forgot how they're, you know, just very gifted in those areas. I think to find those people is really important.
Something that I do is, I've learned is that if you're serving, whether that's at church, Crossroads, a Safe Center, whatever your chosen organization or wherever God's calling you is prayer and remaining God-centered is the most important part of that. Because again, it's not about us and what we're doing. It's what God's using us to do. For his kingdom and his kingdom work. And so if we're not digging into our word and like looking at what he teaches us and praying about it, then we're never going to be doing it for his glory. And if you do get away from your prayer life or reading the Bible and stuff, then you will start drifting and then it will become about you and not about God and him using you. And something that I make sure is when I am serving, I always try and make sure I give the glory to God. So then these people don't look at me like I'm greater than any of them and that I'm just like each one of them and it's God using me for his kingdom work. And I think that's super important in all service work, whether it's jobs, volunteering, working, anything.
Thanks, Mallory. I have a question for Dalton. Is there a time frame for how long individuals can stay at Crossroads? Are there guidelines for staying there? Those are two questions.
Yeah, we actually don't necessarily have a timeline for staying. There are different phases of the program that they can move up in. And then usually when they get to about that last phase, there is a leadership phase, and then, you know, we try to provide them with, you know, whatever they might need to be successful out there. But one of the things we try not to do is we try not to judge people. You know, everyone's got problems. Some people struggle more than others. But one of the things, you know, there's no drug or alcohol use at all. You know, usually we, you know, UA people about once a month, you know, got to keep it clean. And I mean, it is, and that's why, you know, this ministry specifically has to be, you know, God-centered. It has to be Christian-based, because we got to be in touch with that stuff because every situation is different. And, you know, who are we to decide, you know, who stays and who goes, you know? You know, we're not in the business of just kicking people out. But there also have been times where the best thing for this person, you know, is to be out of Crossroads. You know, that's where, you know, God's plan for everyone is different. And so we always just try and make sure, you know, we stick to our rules and we stick to our guidelines. But then the main thing is we're sticking with God and, you know, praying. We have a very small team, but, you know, we're, you know, devotions every morning just as a staff. You know, the guests see that, we're hunkered down in our office with the windows. And, you know, they're banging on the windows, wanting things, you know, wanting medicine, things like that. But we take, you know, 15, 20 minutes and, you know, we pray for them. We pray for us as a staff. And so as far as like a timeline for them staying, there really isn't one. I've seen people in and out, in just a few days because we do have short-term stuff. I've seen people there that have been, you know, there a year. A lot of times when we move out, I think our statistics right now, we have about 12%, for a return rate, which is, you know, very low for the work that we're doing. But there are people that have been in and out of Crossroads for a while. You know, they get out in the world, they hit some bumps and then they struggle. So that's why moving forward, our plans are to provide more of that transitional phase. We're going to do some transitional housing. We're expanding a lot. And so we want to be able to, you know, be in that phase of it too and make it so that, it's easier for them when they do go out there, that they're not just completely on their own, just completely, you know, don't have anybody to turn to or anything. So
we have just a few minutes left. We actually have less time than we have questions. If you, if there's other things that you want to talk to these four about, feel free to grab them before they leave. But I want to end with one question that I'd like each, if possible, to respond to fairly briefly. I'm going to give you a hard question. It's 1 or 2 minutes for each of you. But I want you to imagine that somebody comes to you and says, you know, I really want to be sold on your center and what you do. Statistics and principles don't really impact me that much. Stories do. So could you share with us one brief story? And I realize, you know, we're not asking for names. You know, just give us that portrait of that one person that jumps out at you and says, this gives us an idea of why our ministry, our center is important. 1 or 2 minutes.
You're gonna go, Dalton?
Yeah, I can start.
Okay.
Well, for me, just in the short amount of time, I've been at Crossroads for probably about 6 months. I've had a lot of stories like that, but one of the ones that was actually most recent. I went and saw a gentleman. He was staying at Crossroads for probably about a few weeks, and then he was hospitalized. He couldn't keep any food down or anything. So me and actually Mallory, we spent, all of last week every night going and, you know, seeing him, spending time with him in the hospital. We started, you know, talking with him, you know, what's going on? Like, you know, are you doing okay and everything? And he struggles with some mental disorders, some other things, but we slowly realized he has nobody. He's bounced around from group homes for probably since he was about 12 years old. You know, he has family, but they don't, you know, they don't reach out to him or anything. He does have a grandma, that is a little bit supportive, but she's, you know, she's just very elderly. So, you know, her support is very, limited. And as we were spending time with him, you know, with him, he's very, you know, he's all over the place. So, we slowly found out that he was actually diagnosed with celiac disease, you know, years and years ago. But the doctors, you know, they hadn't checked the medical records. They hadn't noticed any of that stuff. And his symptoms were he couldn't keep anything down. He, you know, they'd give him food and he'd, you know, he'd go right back out. And, you know, they didn't really know what was wrong with him. They thought maybe he had some sort of bowel obstruction. You know, and just going there and starting spending time with him, you know, we realized, you know, that's the problem. Mallory's actually in nursing school. So she's like right away, she's like, I just learned about this. You know, then we realized, you know, just how some people, you know, just need that person and, you know, to be able to advocate, you know, for him and, you know, help him a little bit. It's a little bit beyond, you know, my duties as far as, you know, working there. But it just really impacted my life, just by spending an hour, you know, just going there, spending an hour with him, you know, instead of him being alone in the hospital, just, you know, spending time with it actually, you know, open up doors. And so now, you know, he's back at Crossroads and, you know, I really love him. So.
Nikki, how about you?
This is harder for me because I've been at the Safe Center for 15 years. So I have a lot of stories. One that comes to mind, a couple years ago, we got a call from law enforcement and they had been involved at a situation at a gas station where, some other, citizens at the gas station saw that in another car, there was an incident going on between a man and a woman. He had her in a headlock. He was punching her head, and, screaming at her. And so those citizens called law enforcement. And law enforcement, waited for us. We went to the gas station to talk to that woman. She ended up coming into shelter. She stayed in shelter for a while. We were able to help her get into her own apartment. She got a great job. She was working, 6 days a week to make money so that she could send money back to her kids who were in another state who had been taken away from her. Because she had been in this abusive relationship for a long time. There were a lot of struggles. There was drug use. She was going to, AA. She had started attending church. That was amazing to see the changes with her. And I think that, she grew a lot, and we grew a lot watching her and helping her and seeing how the community came together to help her as well. She went back to him. She has left him again. Her struggles are not over. But part of that story, why it made such a big impact on me, is that other people initially stepped up. And I think that is huge for us to remember that sometimes it doesn't have to be a sad story, because we know there's a lot of sad stories out there. There are a lot of things that touch our hearts, and sometimes the most important thing is just stepping up when you can and doing something, even though it seems really small. That was a huge thing for her, to have someone notice what was going on. And she even said to us, where I come from in the South, nobody would have done a thing. They would have just sat there and watched. And so I think that speaks a lot for us as a community, that we can step up and we can make a difference and make things happen.
Good. Thank you.
Good going.
So, yeah. Steve and or Dudley.
Yeah. A lot of stories. You've heard some of them, but I think of one that's close to home in terms of, a local church in a neighboring community. Who, not a large church, I think by the pastor's appraisal, things were really struggling. And I think we both met him in different settings. I remember meeting him in a coffee shop that we never go to, and I saw him with his Bible, so I just, you know, you don't see that every day. So found out we were doing what we were doing and began a friendship. Dudley continued in that friendship as well. And he came with us to teach and, is never the same. What was exciting to me is not only the impact of his ministry globally, but then he brought back the stories and the stories spread through the church. He would invite various parts of his leadership team and congregation to join in the work. They've adopted the country of Austria and the refugee populations there. So they are connected with Syrians and Iraqis who have traveled across the Mediterranean, all these stories of extreme sacrifice, and it's really touched the congregation. It's made them a different place. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun to see not only impact in the lives of other people, but how this impacts us personally when we're involved. It doesn't even matter which ministry it is. When you get involved, something happens to you. And so that's been a great story for me to witness, just in terms of seeing a church come alive and full of life, and that work as well as the impact.
One of the first or the early trips that I took to Peru, and we were doing a training there with the ITI, as you've heard. There was a man who came from the Peruvian highlands down to Lima, where we were having this training. I'm not quite 5'7", barefoot, but he was about 5'3", I think. A short little man, Quechua man, and he was really touched by the training. And he said, and I go by the name Eddie in Latin America. It's easier to say than Dudley. He says, "Eddie, why don't you come to the highlands and teach there? We need you to come teach." And I said, "You know what, Santiago? I think this would be a great ministry for you to take, to go back." And what I was impressed with or saw at that very early time, early ITI, was the significance of the training for these people, how really helpful it was, and then how important it was for multiplication to take place. Because I wasn't in a position to add another place and to go another. So it was, you've got to do this, and this is transformative, and this is touching your life. So now you train the leaders of these various churches that you're the superintendent of. So that's what impressed me, is how important the ministry is and how important it is to have multiplication.
Well, we have run out of time. And so if you want to interact with them more, feel free to do that. Visit their displays out in the foyer, get some contact information, and begin to pray about what God would have you do coming out of this day. Let me pray for us. Let me pray for these participants and their ministries, and then we will send us on our way. Lord, I want to thank you for every person who has taken a Saturday and they've taken precious time and come and prayed about and thought through and listened to teaching, Lord, and stories and sharing about how we can take your good news, your love, and your grace to a broken world, both here and abroad. I pray, Lord, that you would lead, that you would guide, that you would not let us, that we would not be let go of this, that we would not let go of what you are working in us today, that we would think about it, we would pray about it, and Lord, that you would move us in how and where you want us to serve. Lord, we pray for that kind of grace and that kind of blessing. Lord, I pray for the network beyond. I pray for the Safe Center. I pray for Crossroad Mission, Lord. I pray for Dalton and Nikki and Steve, and I pray for Dudley, and ask, Lord, your blessing upon them. Continue, Lord, and Mallory and others, Lord, who volunteer, continue to move through them, Lord, that we would be able to reach out to others, that we would help others see your mercy that we have experienced, Lord. May many others be benefited because of the seeds you planted today, the fruit that's born from it. May your name be glorified. May you be magnified. May the fame of your name spread because of today. And we pray all of this through Christ and for him. Amen. Thanks so much for coming.